And it's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen, of course, on Joy 620. You can listen online at WRJZ.com. We'll have it up for podcasts tomorrow as well, investinghope.com. And on our Facebook page, we'll be putting it out on Twitter. So all kinds of places where you can hear this show. And today is Election Day. So some of you may be wondering, well, of course, Andrew is going to dive right in to the election. Well, actually, I'm going to stay as far away as possible from the election as I can. Today, instead, I'm going to be joined by a fellow pro-lifer that is working and doing a lot of great work around this country for the pro-life movement. And today I'm joined by Joe Baker, who is the founder and CEO of Save the Storks, a national pro-life organization. Joe, are you there?
It's good to be here, Andrew.
Thank you so much for making some time. I know that today is a big day for a lot of folks, but my goal was to let's keep our eyes on the mission, let's keep our eyes on the ball, and look at the pro-life work that is going on, not just here in Tennessee, but all around the country. And I thought, man, what a great opportunity to talk to a fellow redhead and someone that is doing great work in the pro-life movement. So if you would, start by introducing yourself, kind of talk about what got you into the pro-life movement, and then we'll dive into what Save the Storks is doing.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So it all started with for me when I was in fourth grade, actually. It was in the summer of 1993. And my mom asked me to raise some money for her local walkathon for her pregnancy center. And I had the best excuse in the world, Andrew. At the time, I had broken both my arms at the wrist.
There you go.
And so I told her, sorry, Mom, I'm only going to be able to play Mario Kart this year. And she had something up her sleeve. She basically said, whoever raises the most money this year gets a $350 gift certificate to the local bike shop. And suddenly I knew I needed a new set of wheels, and so it didn't take long before I was going door-to-door with a clipboard. And what happened was I would enter these homes where the family would gather around to hear my pitch, and when they realized it was a pro-life matter, they would suddenly become horrified and very graciously say, I'm sorry, son, but we're all pro-choice here. Now, and you got to remember, I've got a all-chrome BMX with three-piece cranks in the back of my mind, and I would cast my casted arms, and I'd say, what do you mean pro-choice? All my mom does is help women that want to keep their babies. And so, I mean, what would you say to a redheaded fourth grader with two broken arms?
Well, I'm a little biased. I would always listen to a redheaded fourth grader at all times. So,
exactly, especially when he's got two broken arms.
Absolutely.
And so they would partner with my mom's center, these people that would argue with me first that they were not pro-life. And it happened, somewhere that this miracle inside of me happened where I really began to care about this issue of life. And believe it or not, I definitely got that bike by a long shot. I mean, I beat everybody. And looking back, when you ask me, when did it all start for me? It started back then when I began to realize the significance of the injustice of my time. And so it started for me in fourth grade, and it's ever since been a lifelong calling.
You know, and it's amazing when we look at the issues that that are facing us, and even, you know, we're talking on Election Day, and so much angst and so much nervousness and so much fear and so much anger that's going on in the country, and we get to wake up every day and actually engage with the culture. We get to wake up every day in this work in the pro-life movement and partnering with pregnancy centers all across the country to say, look, you know, yeah, we have our struggles, we have our anxieties, we have our fears, but we have a calling, and we have moms and dads and families that are in need, and we've been put here to serve. And so with that, you know, you took that calling, you took that mission, and I've heard your story, and not too long ago, you decided to put together Save the Storks. Now, first, talk about the motivation behind that with the mobile units, and I know you took a cross-country trip and casting vision and getting people to come on board, and then go into why you called it Save the Storks. What was the significance of that name?
That's good. So it all started in 2010. I went on this mission trip to New York City, where I got to see these young, passionate pro-lifers who are using this retrofitted shuttle van was equipped with a sonogram machine, and this thing was super ghetto, but it was helping women basically see and bond with their baby right at the door of an abortion clinic. And when I saw it, I wasn't a big fan. I said, I don't know if I would want to board that. Well, who's going to board that vehicle? And so it just kind of standing off to the side, and out of nowhere, this woman came walking up to me, and she said, I'm here for my appointment, thinking that I was actually working at the abortion clinic. And I was looking around for who to pass her off to, but no one was there. So I just started stuttering and saying, no, I don't work at this abortion clinic. But I'm hanging out with these folks over here that have a mobile unit, and they'd love to get you some resources. But she was just climbing the board. And she said, sure. And I said, really? And as though I had almost talked her out of it. And I walked her over, and she climbed the board and just gave me just enough time to pray. It took about 30 minutes, and as she was coming off, I could see there were tears in her eyes, and she was booting up her phone, and I didn't know what else to ask her, so I said, who are you calling? And she said, I'm calling my mom to tell her that she's going to be a grandmother and to get some help. And for me, that was so life-changing, seeing her and seeing that happen in her life, that I knew I was onto something. And I talked to my wife that night, or at that time she was my fiance. We hadn't even got married yet. And I said, Ann, what if we could do this everywhere? What if we could do it excellent? Imagine the impact that that would have. Maybe that's our small way of contributing and making an impact. So we talked about it, and basically that's when it all started in 2010.
And that's the thing that I've been, I've been having conversations with folks and looking through the lens of the pro-life issue as we approach that. What does that mean for believers? What does that mean for non-believers? What does that mean just for a citizen of this country that's seeking to help those in need? And as we look through that, a lot of times we won't allow our actions to match our words. We may say we're pro-life, we may say certain things, but we tend to refrain from backing that up. And I like to use the illustration of we close our blinds to what is actually going on outside. And so that's what I love about the Pregnancy Center work. Was Roe v. Wade happened in 1973, and then you had these people say, that's not okay, but we're not going to wait for a court to change the decision. We're going to start engaging our communities. We're going to offer excellence. We're going to offer services that are needed. And so that's what I love about Save the Storks, is it was you saw a need, you saw a way to meet that need, and you acted. And then it's grown into a very large and successful organization that is assisting and partnering with pregnancy centers all over the country. And as we look at that, I know, if you could briefly explain the name, because I think every time I talk to people and say, here's what Save the Storks is doing, one of the first questions is, well, why do they call it Storks? Why do they call it Save the Storks? And I'd love to hear you share that story.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Ann and I got married in 2011. And instead of buying a house, we basically moved into a van. And you should have seen the look on her dad's face when I told him, by the way, we're not going to spend all that money on a mortgage. Instead, I got this brand new Mercedes Sprinter we're going to live in with some sleeping bags, and got it at 4% APR. And so we basically just went all in, and we just took the risk. I mean, we risked everything. It was super hard. We were on a $3 per meal budget. We toured with other people, which there's not a lot of romance happening with touring around in a van with some other, early college students. And because that's all who we could find who would go for free, and we were all volunteers, and it was all kind of on the Joe and Ann credit card for a long time. But we just kind of went for it, and said, why not just try it? And we didn't really have any contingency plan. It was just, let's just see if we can convince people to do it. Well, the name Save the Storks was, when I think about the issue of life, everyone that who I've ever found who isn't pro-life seems to love an environmental cause. And so let's try to find the bridge there and get them to at least, start the conversation in a different place. And so To test that out, I printed up these shirts that said 55 million stores shut down 1973. You know, that was on the back, and the front just said save the stores. And as soon as the box arrived, I put one of the shirts on, and I headed out over to the Apple store. And I kid you not, I didn't even make it to the Genius Bar when this woman grabs me by the shoulders, and she spins me around, and she says, "I've heard of the spotted owl and the whale, but who's killing the stork?" And she was visibly upset about it, and so I couldn't help but tell her that there were these Cheneys up in North Dakota that were shooting at them as they were coming over the border.
Those Cheneys, I'm telling you.
Exactly, and she was so upset by that that she was ready to literally sell everything and join my cause and quit her job. And then at some point I realized that this was getting a little too out of hand, so I said, "Ma'am, I'm totally messing with you. We actually don't save the birds, but we're doing something even more important." And then I said, "We're able to help a woman make a decision for life sometimes right at the door of an abortion clinic by providing her the resources that she needs and the ability to bond with her baby right there with a mobile unit." And that turned her completely cold. And she said, "Well, I'm 100% pro-choice, you know, and that wasn't my first rodeo." So without even missing a beat, Andrew, I put my head on her shoulder and I said, "Well, that is wonderful to hear that you're so pro-choice, because 84% of postal board of women have later said they felt having an abortion was their only choice. And so all that we do is help them by providing the resources and alternatives. And actually, 4 to 5 of the women who board our bus will keep their baby, because women don't want to have an abortion. They actually are choosing abortion because they feel cornered by it." So she did not know what to do with that. She was felt so cornered and stunned that suddenly it sounded so pro-choice what I was saying. And for me, it reminded me of the days when I had broken arms. I was like, "It's like I have broken arms again." It's the best marketing idea I've ever done, because suddenly I was able to start the conversation in a new place. I was able to control the conversation to lead someone to the truth, you know. And it was, you know, it was done in a relaxing and fun and whimsical way. So we love our name. We it's as innovative as everything we do.
Yeah, and we certainly appreciate it. And I think if we're honest, one thing missing in the pro-life world, in the pregnancy center world, is a vision for marketing, a vision for reaching a different generation, a vision for relevancy. And some people would say that type of language is harsh, but I think we need to be at a point where we are reaching people in different ways, and we are open to having those conversations, open to dialogue, open to getting people to understand that what they may see as pro-life, it may be different if they would just sit down and have a conversation with us. And that's what I love about Save the Storks. That's what I love about what you're doing. That's why I love that I get the opportunity every single day to get up and lead a pregnancy center here in Knoxville, so that we can change the narrative, the pro-life narrative, to one of loving, serving, and caring, and doing it with excellence. There's nothing wrong with wanting to do it with excellence. So we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll come back and continue this conversation on life, continue this conversation on Save the Storks. We're joined with Joe Baker, founder and CEO of Save the Storks. We'll be back in a sec. Back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you again for listening, as you do every single week, as we talk about life issues. And today I'm joined by Joe Baker, who is the founder and CEO of Save the Storks, an organization based in Colorado, but they're, of course, all over the country and doing great work. Joe, as we transition from the conversation about what got you into the work, where Save the Storks came from and all of that, I guess the next topic I'd love to discuss is the importance of mobile units. And you touched on it in the beginning. As you said, you went to New York, you saw a kind of a shoddy type mobile unit, but it still was making an impact. And how that in some communities around this country, those mobile units are doing amazing work, and it's allowing these pregnancy centers to reach people they otherwise would not be able to reach. Could you share a couple stories that point to that?
Yeah, well, first of all, the problem is that the world is changing so quickly, and the pregnancy center movement is trying to keep up, and marketing to an abortion-vulnerable woman is becoming more and more difficult every day. And so with a mobile unit, you're able to test different things, and there's really six different mobile strategies, you know, that you can do, and different ways to outreach into the community and to get your services right in front of them. And so mobile really is a huge opportunity for most markets for a pregnancy center to reach quite a few more women and save quite a few more babies. We've launching things all over the country, and we're getting great stories back from centers who are using them in all different ways. But we've got some mobile units that will park really close to an abortion clinic, and we'll have women come aboard, and just because they suddenly realize that there's an alternative. A lot of women don't even know that there's another service out there. So that's always a really interesting, you know, kind of client to reach, someone who didn't even know you existed. And then we also work quite a bit in low-income housing. So, like, we'll put our mobile units on certain days of the week in different housing projects, or on certain weeks of the month in different projects. And we found there's this quickly they get to know us, and the whole community knows who we are and what we do, and they begin to just refer women who find themselves pregnant directly to us. A lot of these women don't have transportation, so that makes it really easy for them. So there's multiple different ways, but we have got every story under the sun now. I just heard a story of a woman who was really considering abortion, when she came in the mobile unit. Instead of one heartbeat, we heard two heartbeats. Found out that she was having twins. And for her, that just connected her with the personality of the idea of her children, even though two is even harder than one. It really helped kind of think through the eternity of really what was happening, what was taking place. And she made the decision to keep those two. And so there's all sorts of magical and amazing things that happen with a sonogram on a mobile unit. But ultimately, it's women making the decision for life. So it's also exciting.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as we look at the impact that we're having, you know, I was thinking today that regardless of how this election goes tonight, that tomorrow the sun's going to come up, and 2,500 plus pregnancy centers are going to open doors, and they're going to be ready to serve. And so, you know, whether a pro-life candidate or a pro-choice candidate ends up in the Oval Office, that doesn't change the work that we're doing. It doesn't change the need for those mobile units. It doesn't change the need for our pregnancy centers. It doesn't change the need for our volunteers and for our prayers and for the gifts. And so I'm just so encouraged to see, you know, when I go to CareNet, when I go to the March for Life, when I go to these different things and I see the truth penetrating. I see young people standing up in droves and saying that life has value. Young people that may very well disagree with me on a number of political issues, but the one that we can come together on is the cause of life, and because they've seen their entire life, the internet, and they've seen images of babies. Why? Because we have ultrasound now. And so to impact the way that we're able to impact, what have you seen through Save the Storks? And I think me and you are around the same age, probably on the cusp, on the edge of the millennial generation, but we're looking across the landscape, and me and you do not represent the norm in the pro-life pregnancy center world, but what have you seen in millennials and young people standing up for the cause of life, and how y'all have been able to touch that through Save the Storks, been able to kind of energize and raise up a younger generation for the cause of life?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, first of all, there's a lot of young people that are the next pioneers, that are the next group that is going to carry the torch. And if you look at the situation we're in with the political candidates we have, a lot of that is due to the failed leadership of the pro-life movement. And we've got an opportunity here for these young people to raise up and be the strong, good leaders that we need I feel like there's quite a few young people that are trying to find their spot right now. I get to meet with quite a few of them. They're always wanting to meet with me and come to Colorado Springs. And there's a lot of new and young organizations on the verge. You know, when I went to college, you were really cool if you were, you know, if you had the Christian band, you know, and that's the guy that would get the ring by spring, you know.
Right.
Now they're looking at the guy that gets the ring by spring is the social entrepreneur, you know, the person that really wants to make a difference in the world. And there's tremendous amount of pro-life activity in young people and interest in young people, where young people are like, you know what, I could just start an organization. I could just create the culture for that other people live in. And there's more and more of that. And then at the same time, I think there's still an old version of pro-life that is kind of on its way out, too. There's a change, and there's a handoff that is happening that, you know, not everyone is on board with. And as that transition's taking place, like, there's, you know, there's some big changes that have to happen within our movement to really fully gain the entire millennial generation, because the research says these young people are very, very pro-life, you know, and, you know, they're more pro-life than ever before, and that's because they grew up with a three-dimensional image of their brother right on the fridge, you know, and the technology that these kids see is unbelievable. I mean, in the 80s, the only place you'd ever see an aborted image of a baby would be at a protest, you know. Now, any young person in the world can access that thanks to Google. And so that material is everywhere. If you really want to know what abortion is, you can find out really quick. And so it's, you know, this is a pro-life generation. We just have to grasp them. We have to gain their access to them and, you know, and win them over. And I think they're looking for kind of the new spirit of the pro-life movement. And in a lot of ways, they just was built on that. You know, the spirit of grief and brokenness instead of anger. And
right.
Because of that, we're attracting a lot of young people. But there's still a ton of space for young people in this movement. And we're trying to attract more and convert more. And we want to see the other organizations attracting more and more young people, too.
Yeah, I had meetings just this week with three different college students, and who would probably say that they're pro-life. But as we begin to talk, and as I begin to explain what we do at Hope Resource Center and how we provide free services, how we have three nurse practitioners on staff, four RNs on staff, how we have a medical executive committee made up of physicians, and that we have three ultrasound machines in-house, and that we're providing STD testing and treatment and pregnancy tests and ultrasounds and parenting classes and material assistance, 50 baby showers a year roughly, and the list goes on and on, mentoring. And I said, you know, we don't check the political status. We don't check the bank account status. We don't check, you know, we don't check their opinion on the polarizing issue of the day. What we do is we see them as image bearers that are deserving of our love and that they have value and deserve our respect. And you should see the look, and I'm sure you've seen this look, on the young people's faces, the college students' faces, of going, oh, that's what y'all do. Because they had preconceived notions of what we did. And we've struggled in years past to control the narrative, to push the narrative of who we really are. And it's so amazing to see what's happening within the pro-life movement and watching these organizations like Brave Love, like Save the Storks, like, you know, folks coming up and changing the game and saying, look, we are a loving people. We are a caring people, you know, full of mercy, full of grace. And it's an amazing thing to be a part of and to watch. And I'm just thankful that y'all are helping and leading the way and leading the charge for a new pro-life movement, so to say.
That's exactly what we're after. This is a new spirit and a new time, and it's you know, my parents lived through a time when abortion was legalized. I was born into this world. Like, I was born into a world where abortion was legal, and so it's just a different attitude of how to bring about change. And I've committed my whole life to it. doing so. And I think there are a lot of other people like me that are, you know, that's being attracted by the younger version of the pro-life movement.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Joe. We're going to go to commercial break. We appreciate you spending the time with us and taking the time. We'll be praying for Save the Storks, and we stand with you. If you're ever in Knoxville, give me a shout. Thanks so much.
Yeah, sounds like a plan. Thank you.
This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen. Maybe you're about to get home and you're losing us on the radio, Joy 620. You can go to WRJZ.com, listen online, or you can wait till tomorrow and you can hear it on podcast at investinghope.com on iTunes. We'll post it on social media as well. So we just ended our conversation with Joe Baker, founder and CEO of Save the Storks. And right now we're going to transition to the president of Save the Storks, and that is Paul Isaacs. So they're taking their time out today and joining us. And today is election day, Paul. So quickly, who did you vote for? I'm kidding. Don't answer that. The last thing we want to do is, that's why I scheduled interviews today, is so I could stay as far away as I could from the current election. So as we look at the pro-life movement in the landscape across the country, and Save the Storks is working all across the country to assist and partner with pregnancy centers, why the focus? Why is it important to focus with pregnancy centers that are already in operation and seeking to help transform and mold and get them to look outside of the box and maybe change some things up with the way they're reaching their communities?
I think it's important to work with pregnancy centers who are already there with this issue because this is a gospel-centered and discipleship-centered movement that we think it is. We're very committed to the gospel, and we're very committed to when a woman chooses life, that we don't simply say, hey, be warm and well-fed. We want to begin a relationship with that young woman, with her significant other, with her family, hopefully with her child, that will lead to a turning to Jesus Christ in salvation. And then the relationship of growing to be more like Jesus that occurs in the act of discipleship. And so the pregnancy centers they're there already. And Save the Storks, our location is in Colorado Springs. We cannot develop that relationship from here. We can provide the tools to reach women and be innovative in that way to these pregnancy centers. But ultimately, the heroes of the day are the ones that are out there on the front lines, that are compassionately and lovingly meeting women and then offering them a chance to see that beautiful image of their child, and hopefully that decision that they make is for life, and then begin walking with them toward restoration and healing in what is a broken and tragic place that we know is an abortion clinic.
Absolutely. So as with that answer in mind, what brought you to, not just to Save the Storks, but what brought you to the pro-life movement? You know, a lot of times we're told, well, you're a man, you don't have a say in the matter, which we know is just false and really needs to be rebuked. But what brought you to the pro-life movement enough to say, you know what, I'm going to not only get engaged, but my life's work, my career is going to be in pro-life work?
That's a great question. I think that the short answer to that is just an obedience to God and what He calls you to do at a particular stage of your life. I could do other things as far as working for other organizations, or I was in campus ministry for 17 years with a group called the Navigators and gave my life to invest in young people, but all during that time was pro-life. And now that I work in a pro-life ministry, I'm still giving my life away to help young people and every chance and other people in discipleship. So It's a ministry, a life of giving your life away and trying to see other people come to know Jesus and become more like Him in discipleship. But I've always been pro-life. I can't even remember a time when I wasn't aware of this issue. I just can't remember a time where it began to change the way I live. Would be when I was in my probably early or my late 20s, and I started noticing people that looked like me that had children that didn't look like them or me. And that was, they were little Chinese girls. And I would ask about, how did you have a Chinese girl? And I would hear about what was going on in China and the one-child policy and the forced abortions and the orphanages. And God led us through a process of obedience to where we said, we cannot save all the children in China, and we can't even affect the government policy in China, but we could adopt one, and we could save one. And God miraculously provided for us to do that, the sacrificial part on ours and sacrificial giving from others that helped us bring our little Emmy home. And she's 9 years old now, and she's the light of our lives, and we love her to death, and she's one of us. Then I was asked when I lived in Ohio to run for office, and that's a long story, and it's a fun story, and I won't share that story now because we probably just don't have time. But I was asked to run based on a bill that wasn't being permitted to come to the floor for a vote, and it was called the Heartbeat Bill. And I won't say what group, but it would surprise you what group was not allowing it to come to the floor for a vote because it was so controversial. But I was asked to primary someone. And so after prayer and counsel, we did. And we almost won that race, but God had another plan. And so at various places of my life, we're faced with obedience. And when God asks us to do something, He expects us to obey. And I really ask for clarity, and I think that my wife's leading and our involvement together, I can tend to kind of discern the voice of the Lord. And so when we were looking at Save the Storks and what God was doing through these young people, we just felt that God had a role for us to play in helping. And so we came aboard early when it wasn't trendy and exciting, but right. It was hard work and still is hard work. But we feel like God has given us a job to do, and we're going to do it faithfully until He has us go somewhere else.
And that's a great transition. You know, a lot of times millennials and folks that are in that age range, are scoffed at and are the butt of a lot of jokes and things like that. And I remember the first CareNet conference I went to. I was pulled out, and some of the staff looked at me and was like, "Why are you here? You're a young male. You know what brought you to this? Please, let us know." And I remember thinking, "Wow, that's." And then I started looking around the room and going, "Wow, I do look a lot different than everybody else here." And so, with your experience in campus ministry and your experience in working with the younger generation, please, if you don't mind, give the listeners to the show, those that are here this live, those that are here this on podcast through iTunes and other places, a sense of hope for a younger generation. So it's one thing for me to give lip service to it being one of them, but from your standpoint, from someone that's worked with college age kids and young adults and you started with Save the Storks early, what does it look like now that we look at the pro-life movement and we see the work that's being done by what a lot of people are calling the pro-life generation, the younger people coming up?
Wow, that's a big question. I will say that what I am encouraged by is that when we step back and we can somehow ask God for eyes to see this issue the way that I think He sees the issue, and that is we see young women and young men that are broken just like we are broken. At some level, we have to remember the line from that old song that I used to sing, that I'm just a sinner saved by grace. And while sin it's not part of my identity now, it's not part of my identity because of the grace of God and what He's done in my life. And so when we can look at young women, and we can look at abortion doctors and people in the abortion industry, not as the enemy, but as being pawns in the hands of the enemy, and we can think of our own brokenness, then we can turn with love and compassion in the same way that Jesus dealt with the woman at the well, in the same way that Jesus dealt with the woman caught in adultery, the same way He dealt with Zacchaeus and Paul and Peter and everyone that He met. He was full of grace and truth. We also need to remember, and I don't know if you ever sang this song growing up. I used to sing the hymns growing up. Did you sing hymns?
I did, absolutely. Southern Baptist, and one through, and through, buddy.
Then you know what I'm talking about, and you could probably finish this for me, that there's this song that talks about grace. It's God's grace.
Mm-hmm.
Grace that is greater than
all.
Mm-hmm. All our sin. So there is no sin that is bigger than the cross of Christ. We cannot out-sin the grace of God. So as we as this generation, we look to the people who have gone before us, and we honor them, and we thank them, and we continue the work that they've done, and we don't turn to anger, as it's easy to turn to anger. And it's easy. You look at what is happening, and we could easily go there. But if we can pray and we can approach this issue the way that I think Jesus did, then we'd be full of grace and truth. We don't compromise on either of those things. We can really, really start solving some issues and start making a dent in this Holocaust.
You know, and that's what's amazing about the work that we get to do every day. And so from my standpoint, you know, leading a pregnancy center, from your standpoint, you know, helping equip pregnancy centers all across the country, you know, the fact that we get to do this work, the fact that we get to see life celebrated, the fact that we get to put into practice, you know, I love that scripture says, love your neighbor, love the Lord with all your heart, soul, and mind, love your neighbor. But what that turns into a lot of times, a lot of people think neighbor, that's somebody I know, but this work is strangers standing for strangers. It goes even further. The people that donate to Hope may never meet the patient that we see today, but they donated and they prayed for a stranger. Why? Because that's an image bearer, and that's all they need to know. That's all they need to know is I know that they're an image bearer, which means they have value to me. And they should be loved. They should be served. And so that's what I love about this work is it's a work that, you know, at Hope, we're not making any money when a patient walks in the door. And we average about 10 patients a day on appointment. And some days almost 20, counting walk-ins and everything. And we're doing that knowing that we're not going to charge them a dime. But we do that because they're an image bearer. And we believe that life is so precious and so sacred because the life author gave it to us as a gift, that we're going to take care of it. And that's what I love about this work. And that's what I love about what y'all are doing, is it's casting that vision. And people are catching on. And it's people that may disagree with us on other issues, and they're trying to find their way with the gospel and those type things. But I tell our staff all the time, you know, our patients didn't Google, "I think I'm pregnant and I need Jesus." They Googled, "I think I'm pregnant, and I don't know what to do about that." And so let's deal with them there. You know, let's deal with them there, and then we'll go further. We got to take a quick break, Paul. We'll be back in just a second to finish up this conversation. And we're back. It's Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for listening. Right now I'm joined by the president of Save the Storks, Paul Isaacs, and thank you so much for taking some time out of your day and on this election day as we discuss life issues. And certainly as we close the last segment, we were talking about how blessed we are to get to do this work. You know, we all have come through different paths. My path was, you know, I was a political science major, worked in politics, ran a campaign, worked for a party, worked at the legislature. And God just convicted me in my idolatry for politics and my idolatry of winning elections and using people as props and not seeing them as image bearers. And so from that, we get to a point where we want to see life celebrated. We want to see life cherished. And you see that in Emmy. Was your daughter Emmy? And I see that in my three kids and Gavin, Summer, and Evelyn, and just the precious gift that God chose me. Out of all the people to ever walk the face of this earth, God chose me to be Gavin's dad. I mean, that floors me every time I think about it. And so how can people learn more about Save the Storks? How can they get involved and engage with Save the Storks? Even though you're in Colorado Springs, what can people do to partner with y'all for this life work?
Well, you know, first of all, we'd you know, go to our website, SaveTheStorks.com. You know, we would ask you to prayerfully consider partnering with us if that's what God would lead you to do. We can engage with you on that. But God is doing a work that is helping us bless pregnancy centers all over the country. So as a ministry, if God would lead you to give, that would be wonderful. We would welcome that as we move forward in this ministry. But we'd also ask you to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram and Twitter and Pinterest and those things, and push out the message. One of the things that we're trying to do is we're trying to change the narrative in the culture that we live in, that when we want people to think, when they think of pro-life people, that they think of kind,
preach,
loving, may not agree with them, but boy, they're good and honest and loving and dear people. And I want to invite them to my cool party, you know, that kind of thing right there.
Absolutely.
As opposed to these are angry people or these are hateful people, which, you know, we may never, you know, the world will always hate us at some level. We understand that. That's what Jesus told us. But we want the message to be the thing that is offensive, not us as messengers. So, but really pushing out our messages on that we do on social media is helpful. And visit us and read about us there at SaveTheStorks.com. Those are great ways to start.
Yeah, and, you know, I think as we seek to change that narrative, and I followed Joe in CareNet and did a care talk on changing the pro-life narrative. And really that needs to be who we are, a people that lead with love and not anger, not bitterness. You know, we Hope Resource Center opened its doors not to attack the abortion lobby, but we opened our doors because we knew there was a need for people. There was a need in this community. And we opened our doors across the road from an abortion clinic, hoping and praying that they would close their doors. And they did in 2012. But it wasn't out of hate or anger toward them. It was understanding that they are image bearers, and we would love to see, you know, the Lord raise up a Paul type within the abortion industry and flip it upside down. And so I'm so thankful for what y'all are doing across this country, and just know that we are here in Knoxville partnering, and we have the same heart, the same passion to see the narrative change. And if there's anything we can do for y'all in Knoxville, Tennessee, we're happy to do that. So Paul, thank you so much for joining us. Please tell Joe as well. We appreciate him for taking some time out. We are just thankful for you, thankful for what you're doing, and appreciate you.
Well, the feeling is mutual. We're thankful for you. You are our heroes, and we exist for you. Just know that.
All right. Thanks a lot, Paul. Thanks for joining us here in Tennessee. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Another great show. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll have it up on podcast tomorrow on iTunes and on social media in different places. Folks, it's Election Day. Sit up cozy next to the fire, grab a cup of coffee, and watch cartoons or something. I don't know what to tell you. We'll talk more next week. Next week. Thank you so much for what you're doing. Thank you for standing with Hope. We love you and appreciate you. Talk to you soon.